I talked in episode 1 about how abuse manifests, that of sexual abuse, racial abuse, child abuse, verbal abuse, physical and domestic abuse, and so on. And in earlier parts of episode 2, I talk of human motivation. Power, money, sex are the root cause and byproduct of each and every war. I state again, every war is about land theft, first and foremostly. Of course, it's very often shrouded in excuses of differences in colour, race, religion, age, whatever the differential is you want to single out. However, fundamentally, it's about land theft, which is driven by abuse of power and human greed. So the desire for money. I think it says a lot about our society, doesn't it, when you hear the average Joe flippantly comment that by and large the great British public are all decent and honest people. Well, I ask how exactly that can be true, because you'll never really know who switched to whose side, when or even how they did it. World War II saw a lot of this type of behaviour in the form of spies, informants and espionage, when we lived in a time where it was very difficult to trust anyone. And bringing that back to present day, you may or may not be aware, although it is published online and was revealed on a TV show a while back, HMRC offers a reward for any informant disclosing details of those committing tax fraud. And if you don't believe me, as usual, there'll be a link in the podcast notes. The reward is obviously dependent on a successful investigation and securing any funds due. However, if you think about it, it couldn't be any closer to World War II in the modern day world, could it? Over time, I've heard people spout the old adage, money is the root of all evil. But it's not money at the root at all. That's just the currency, the vehicle or the mechanism to obtain what it is you desire. Unfortunately, what's at the root of all evil is humans and human greed that propels their desire. But I want to caveat here, abundance is not the same as obsessive human greed. Abundance is something else altogether and is predicated on your willingness to work and achieve your goals, unfortunately the hard way, as any quick fix is usually achieved by devious means. Unless, of course, it's a win of some sort. So ultimately, it's about how you earn your abundance that really separates the different approaches to abundance. And if you want to delineate it this way, perhaps separates the dark from the light. So if anybody does ever say, in my presence anyway, that by and large people are generally decent and honest, well, you'll probably hear me retort, yeah, right, because you'll never really know the extent to which that is true. And of course, that's what we want to believe, absolutely, without doubt. But as the saying goes, nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors. And people generally have a way of exposing their true selves at some point down the line. As someone once said to me, the truth will always out. And actually, if that were the case, we'd have no need for a legal justice system that, quite frankly, is splitting at the seams and, had it not been for the paralegal sector, may well have collapsed as an institution in itself several decades ago. We'd have no need for barristers, lawyers, judges, courtrooms or prisons. There'd be no need for a police force that is not only splitting at the seams due to the broad array of crimes it now has to deal with, but one that in itself has its own battleground and clear endemic issues, certainly with those publicised in the press over recent years. There'd be no need for charities, thousands upon thousands of charities begging for funding all day, every day, in support of abused humans and animals, both nationally and internationally. We wouldn't see the existence of a scam society, whereby, according to Ofcom, 45 million people were set to be targeted in 2021 in the UK. That's roughly 70% of the UK population. Of course, I'll pop a link to that article in the podcast notes. There'd be no need for an army, an institution designed to protect us nationally and internationally from local and global threats, but who, like the police force, has had its own fair share of issues that have similarly been publicised over the years. Domestic violence wouldn't be at an all-time high, heightened and exposed during COVID, but in reality it's been happening for decades, if not centuries, but passed off as standard everyday human behaviour, and thus it's all gone unnoticed and unspoken about, and certainly unchallenged. And I could go on, but bringing it back to World War II, one thing you'll never truly know about people, or humankind, is when or who will switch to whose side, for the right price, the right bonus, the right salary, the right designer green uniform, or a significant level of power at any given time. And it can be at the click of your fingers that a human will alter their position in order to alter or elevate their level of status and power, be it through financial incentivization or otherwise. Indeed, again, power, money and sex are the top three human motivations, certainly in any war, but more evidently were in World War II, and it would seem still are today. In light of that, what amount of money or position of power would motivate someone to commit acts of terrorism or murder or harm of any sort? Again, you'd never know until it was too late. And you have to remember that humans are transient beings and their state of being can always change and invariably does, dependent on the circumstances they find themselves in. So this leads me beautifully back to leasehold abuse, because that's ultimately where financial abuse and abuse of power connected to leasehold plays a huge part, which is, as I said before, the oldest crime in the book, because it's directly about matters pertaining to land and land theft, either direct or indirect. Again, I'll come on to talk about the kind of abuse I've seen later on when I give you a few explicit examples of what I'm talking about that you might be astonished even happens in the UK today. But I'm telling you that it does, and it's happening all day, every day, right underneath your open square bracket leasehold, close square bracket nose. I always say the crimes don't change, the way they're carried out does. But essentially crime has been the same since the beginning of time. Again, its motivations back then could be mapped directly back to power, money and sex. Enter Frederick Bastiat's statement. But really, this does call into question the legal justice system in its entirety. And I'll come back to that in a later episode as well, because to this day, I cannot understand why we have a legal justice system. And I'm talking about a civil court system here in the UK governing land and property that does not have the power or jurisdiction to govern what I believe is a fairly nefarious industry and framework, and to tackle it with the severity that it deserves. It's absolutely beyond me. But it would seem that Frederick understood it very well indeed. In fact, the way Frederick articulates his statement, it speaks to me in a way that states we're really only dealing with two main stratas of society and humanity, perhaps ways of being or even schools of thought, which are quite simply light and dark, which are both opposite ways of being or opposite existences. This calls to mind the very ethos of Star Wars, the guiding principles and very existence of light and dark. I've placed a reference in the podcast notes where you can read more about this. What we do know, because we see evidence of it every day in our own lives and also in the media and the press, is that light attracts light, and conversely, the darkness attracts more of the same. That's why the saying birds of a feather flock together exists. It's why like-minded people move in the same or similar circles, and certainly why those of equal or similar wealth, stature and position do the same, although are not necessarily split by light and dark alone. That would be a further delineation. In fact, this is supported scientifically. And in the laws of physics, this is known as constructive interference, which states that when two wavelengths of equal length meet, the size of the frequency doubles. Gary Brecker, human biologist and biohacker, references this in one of his presentations. The theory itself was developed by Thomas Young at the turn of the 18th century. Indeed, I'd say several life-altering finds appear to have been established in the 18th century, wouldn't you agree? So that means those who operate in the light can be powerful, but so too can those who operate in the dark, because waves operate in harmony. But it's just that the wavelengths have to be equal in order to double the frequency. It's not the size of the wavelength that matters. I'll pop a link in the podcast notes to both Young's work and Gary's presentation. One clear finding from an experiment called the Spain Scale of Emotion, which Gary touches upon during his presentation, concluded that of 25,000 participants in this study, the frequency of authenticity was the most powerful frequency measured during that experiment to leave the human body. In fact, 4,000 times more powerful a frequency than love. So in that regard, humans can operate at lower vibrations or lower frequencies, most likely when they're being their inauthentic selves, or higher vibrations or higher frequencies when they're being their authentic selves in terms of level of output or light or power, whichever the term you want to use is to define the frequency. And you wouldn't be able to hide that, no matter how much you tried. So no amount of covering up or masking can dispel that science. Again, remember the saying, the truth will always out. The truth will always prevail because it's the difference between authenticity and inauthenticity, or operating at a higher frequency or a lower frequency. Perhaps that's exactly why, almost always and invariably, the light will always overcome the dark eventually. Because if you're not operating from a space of authenticity, your frequency will invariably be lower. Enter Star Wars, and of course everything I've said thus far in respect of war. But remember, light can also attract the dark, and the dark can attract the light. It's essentially why people fall in with the wrong crowd. It's why abusers prey on the vulnerable, either becoming their victims or their accessory, because they have an inroad through their victim's vulnerability. Sometimes that connection is created voluntarily, where the victim has an option to partake. Sometimes it's created involuntarily, where the victim is given no choice. But really, it's that the abuser sees something in their victim, either traits or other advantages that they can leverage, traits that they themselves don't possess, and therefore see an opportunity to create connections that wouldn't otherwise exist, or rather that they would not be able to orchestrate, coordinate, or manipulate with any other connection, and that wouldn't be as valuable to them anyway. All of that, of course, creates shades of grey. And as I always say, it's very often the shades of grey you need to be most careful of. Again, I'll bring it back to World War II, or indeed any war. Whose side would you switch to for the right price, the right level of power, the right designer green uniform, the right bonus, the right salary? What petty crime or even other extreme of atrocities would you commit? In which case, this possibly leaves us with three states of being: light, dark, and shades of grey. The reason I touch on this is that I've seen these types of behaviours play out with other leaseholders themselves, behaving exactly in this way because they've decided they want to bat for the winning team, i.e. the freeholder, certainly in one particular leasehold that springs to mind. All I can say is that this is possibly because they can only be incentivised to do so, financially or otherwise. But moreover, certainly with what I've witnessed, it comes back to the top two human motivators of power or money, or both. And one thing I will say is consider yourselves exceptionally lucky if your fellow lessees are on your side and standing together to do what's right for the sake of their homes and their livelihoods. Indeed, I do see that openly and tangibly in other leaseholds of mine. What I've always maintained about leasehold and any associated running costs and additional costs, such as those for the structure, is that the bottom line is no one objects to contributing towards a reasonable and viable cost. In short, reasonably priced and qualitative works. But more than that, works that are actually required and not forcibly instructed wherever or whenever possible, whether they are truly required or not. However, what leaseholders fundamentally object to is being taken advantage of or financially abused, where behaviours of these freeholders and management companies are akin to those of racketeers, and in some cases to the extreme. I often hear leaseholders talk of mafia when describing those who manage their land under this type of regime, and it is a regime. But I will come on to touch upon the impact of people's finances, especially when they're taken advantage of, and in many cases to the extreme, a bit later on. However, as the old saying goes, an Englishman's home is his castle and is the single biggest outlay they will likely ever expend. So when finances surrounding that start to become a burden or under threat, situations can spiral out of control, surfacing issues with illness, health, well-being, loss of the value of their asset, or their asset in its entirety, or worse than that, loss of life. But as I've already said, leasehold abuse is not a symptom of the private sector alone. In fact, the problem starts in the public sector, in my opinion. And this is simply because there is zero requirement for full financial transparency in that sector. To that end, there is perhaps some merit in local councils being forced to go bust, because only then might those who govern the framework truly know, understand, and learn, the hard way it would seem, what it is to tread carefully, act diligently, and with respect and consideration concerning taxpayers' funds. But instead of that, what we see is very little strategic sourcing, very little or no truly independent tendering processes, and little or no questioning and interrogation of expenditure. Let's not forget, these freeholders have their fingers in many pies, all claiming their slice of that pie in whichever way they can, from servicing local council needs to, as I've previously stated, servicing the management needs in the social sector housing arena. In the next episode, I'll document some of my experiences, those which I've come across both personally and professionally, some scenarios of which are simply horrifying.